This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's the Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
All right, it's that time. We're back on the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network. I'm your host, Jay, here at the Brewing Network Studios in lovely downtown Concord, here with Bevo. Hey, Bevo.
Hello.
Oh, man, her New Year's resolution was to get in there quicker with the hello.
It's pretty good.
It was wonderful.
Great content.
Thank you.
Scott's here, too. Hey, Scott.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
It's going all right.
Yeah.
Excited to be in the studio with today's guest.
Today's guest is Almanac Beer Company. We're here with Phil and David. Hey, guys.
What is this?
Their mics aren't on.
Oh, press that button on your box there. That's my fault. The one on the front. There you go. Try it now.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. Hello, hello.
Okay. Well.
No.
Hello.
There we go.
Hey.
All right.
You think we'd learn by now to work out stuff after the... What are we on? Year 16, Beef? We still don't work stuff out before the show starts? Jesus.
It's kind of our thing.
It is. Hey, welcome back, man. We last talked to Phil. I think it was just you, Phil, right? When we did our show live from the Rare Barrel.
It's just about a year ago right now.
Happy to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you back.
That was a fun time.
In the studio this time.
Yes. And we're excited to see what's new with Almanac and try some of their delicious beers. Before we get into that, delayed gratification, we have to nag you like we always do at the top. You can contact us. You're not going to. 888-401-BEER.
No, I thought you updated your notes.
I did.
888-401-BEER?
I still say that every time.
I think we cancel the phone lines in like 2017? Bevo's nodding
in a
very impatient fashion.
How did I do that?
Jay was very excited. He came in for the first time in 6 years with a new sheet, new notes. Mm-hmm. He was like, look, man, I got rid of all this stuff that I don't say anymore.
And then
first
I've actually, I've gotten one thing wrong before the show, or I've had to cross one thing out, and then I cross another thing out. Right?
Yeah, perfect.
Now I'll actually like look at it and read it.
Yeah.
So,
and Daniela will be answering your calls.
Yeah. I'm your host, Brewcaster Jay. Let's see. Join us in the chat. That's a thing.
Bevo is like, I don't think so.
Okay.
Bevo, can you please help? What is happening?
I mean, the chat room exists. I don't have the ability to go into it anymore because I run the cameras.
Okay.
She's killing it. This is a great operation we have going.
It's unmoderated.
There you go.
Email still exists.
2021.
Scott at thebrewingnetwork.com. Jay at thebrewingnetwork.com. That still works.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Go post in the Reddit forum for Brewing Network. Does that exist?
I just got on Reddit. It's great.
I love Reddit.
Plug for Reddit. Sponsor us. So the cameras exist. That's something we got. Brewingnetwork.com/TV. And you can listen live on the Brewing Network app. I'm just pausing for, like, confirmation.
No, there's no app. There's never been an app.
Search BN Mobile in the App Store.
The first thing that comes up when you search Brewing Network Reddit is a thread titled, I like the Brewing Network, comma, but. That's all it says. Oops. I like the Brewing Network, but.
Oh,
and then
no,
it's
subject. And then
51 comments. I'm sure we just are.
But that was
hot
before.
Garbage.
That was before Sour Hour, though.
Sure. 4 years ago? No, it wasn't. Maybe it's
way
because
before.
We started it.
I actually don't think there is an app anymore.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Yeah.
Hold on one second.
Why would there be?
Well, I also just tried to look it up because I certainly don't have it on my phone.
No, why would you?
but I can't find it in the app.
Jesus Christ. Just download the damn podcast and call it a day. All the other stuff is nonsense, apparently.
Yeah. Just you can tell there's been cutbacks. Please give the Brewing Network money. We're gonna have to do like a one of those infomercials.
I
with
debated
like
telling
the dog.
You.
Should I say something?
Yeah. We can cut that out. We won't.
Yeah, we won't.
We got rid of the editing software.
My Adobe subscription has expired, B. What do I do?
Well, it's still a podcast, I think. Are we recording? So subscribe to the podcast, and I'd say leave feedback, but honestly don't at
whatever.
This point.
Go hang out on Milk the Funk, man. That's where your feedback's at.
Listen to our last show. We had Kevin Osborne from Celador.
That was a great show, man. Kevin's beers kick ass. Have you guys had much Celador beer?
Yeah, we really like Celador a lot.
Holy moly, he's
Kevin's
killing
a wizard
it.
For sure.
I can't remember us ever having like a lineup of beers that were so different.
Yeah, really varied.
The previous ones. He kind of brought, I mean, there was one that was like, this is like whiskey, but it was like still and in like a whiskey bottle.
But very spirit-like. Yeah, you know, there was a couple left over from the stash, and we opened one up in Tahoe over the weekend. It was a that same bottle, or like a small wine bottle, and it was a blackberry red wine, again, a still beer, and it was very, like the whiskey was spirit-like. This was very wine-like, but blackberry forward and just wonderful. Man, that guy's killing it.
Cool stuff. So yeah, go back and listen to that show. And what else? Anything else new from the last show, Scott?
Well, it's a new year.
It's a new year.
You know, here we are in 2020. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit at the end of 2019 about sort of what's coming up. And you guys, your big thing is this, your brew house getting hooked up. So let's get a progress report.
Yeah, not.
No update.
No, actually, we are going to start. Sorry, I was just thinking in my mind about saying that out loud. No, we've got equipment in, and
I'm going to start saying the N-word over and over.
No. Is he one of the only laughs of the season? From
I'll cut it out and post it.
You guys got all your fermenters, right?
Yeah, we got those. Happened. We got fermenters.
That's super exciting.
We got other equipment. I'll tell you off air what I was going to say.
Okay, all right.
And then this will make sense. Okay. But yeah, it's moving along swimmingly, and we're hoping to be all done with it in 2 months from now, probably more like 3 months from now. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just like a lot of waiting around and then wait around and hurry up.
Sure.
You know?
So Q2 2020.
Yeah, right on the edge.
Okay.
Q1, Q2.
Spear Barrel Pilsner. Look for it.
Seriously. Lagers.
I mean, we're definitely going to make a Pilsner.
Oh, we're making lagers.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know what I need to do is I need to go pull the audio from the session, your guys' appearance back in 2014 when you were like, we're going to only ever make sour beer. No.
Do you think we said that?
Yeah, probably. Something along.
So.
Maybe not exactly that, but.
We probably talked a lot about being an all sour beer company and how that's important to us. And it, you know, it has been and still is that we're sour focused, but, you know, it's great that we have Almanac here today because I think. Where we've, it's not the same path, but, you know, similar paths, and you guys are making a lot of clean beer these days and terrific clean beer. Actually, when we were talking about the Pilsner, I was thinking of, I forget the exact name, but it's something like Craft
Vibes.
Pilsner or Craft Vibes. Lager. Is that it?
Vibes, yeah.
Yeah, Vibes. Super good. And I remember when we came to do a tour of Almanac, I think that's all I was drinking, and I drank quite a bit of it. So... You know, I think things change over time, and but yeah, I think that's maybe just a good. Are you looking up the audio right now?
Oh no! I need some time to pull that, but you know what I know for sure is that you were like, well, we're a muffin top brewery. So what you're saying is you're going to start making muffin bottoms.
We're going to sell mostly muffin tops.
It's not a dig.
And some muffins.
Okay. Perfect.
I don't think we're selling any muffin bottoms.
Anything that's muffin related that anybody wants to buy.
Anyone want that muffin trunk?
Yes. Yeah,
that muffin trunk real good.
But, you know, things do change over time. And, you know, speaking of changing focus a little bit and going from not having a brewery to having a brewery, maybe you guys could tell us a little bit about kind of the brief history of time, the brief history of Almanac. For those who are not familiar with it.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, Almanac started off as a contract, you know, tenant brewery. So we had our wort produced by other folks, and they handled packaging. And then we did a lot of blending ourselves in the very beginning. And, you know, that worked great for a while. We made some good beers. We were really happy with what came out. But it had its limitations, and so we were able to eventually open our own brewery. And that's kind of where we are today, about 2 years later. It's kind of nice. You know, it's like having roommates. You're like, who used this bowl? Why is this bowl dirty? Or where's my spoon? And now it's like, you know, where your spoons are every day.
They ate my leftovers?
Yeah.
Are you for real?
Totally.
You can only blame yourself for the dirty dishes, no one else.
I mean, that's sort of the mantra that we take now with having a brewery, is that it's there's just not an excuse. If it is, it's you. It's like, mm-hmm. you gotta, you know, there's not a reason for bad beer whatsoever anymore. So in a way, it's kind of scary, and in a way, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's it's a good way to like ease into the whole like starting a brewery thing too. When you're there's so much else to do, like when it comes to distribution, starting a brand, and rebranding.
Over, it's Almanac. Over and over again. Totally. You know, we, you know, kind of like, you know, just speaking to like Rare Barrel said, never make a sour. I think it's awesome they're going to make other beer. Actually, you know, for us, like it's like we, I think at some point we said we'd never make an IPA. That's not true. We actually make more IPA than we make anything these days.
Mm. Yeah. See, this is why you got to avoid the sweeping statements. You know, when you start businesses. Yeah.
Keep all doors open.
You should look at the language we use. You know, the door is cracked open for sure.
For sure.
There was a point we said we were never going to make fresh beer again, and that was back when we didn't have our own brewery. And so obviously now we make a lot of fresh beer actually, and it's one of those things. I think, you know, I'm glad we do, but kind of that sweeping statement thing again. Who knows what the future is 4 years ago, right?
What is the ratio? You said it's more IPA now than anything else?
Like our top three, you know, brands are going to be Love, Loud. So Love's an IPA, Hazy IPA, Loud's a DIPA, Hazy DIPA. And then it's going to be the Sour Novas. But, you know, Sour Novas for us, they rotate throughout the year, different fruit. But those are canned, natural, 100% mixed fermentation, oak fermented, sours. It's kind of a cool thing for our top three.
Yeah, that's definitely a cool thing
but
for top
ratio three. Wise, like 30 to 70 sour to fresh.
Wow.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
Yep.
So, you know, that's briefly Almanac. And I think, you know, you guys are here because you do put such a focus on the sour side of things. But let's get into what you guys, your individual roles are and even have been at Almanac since you started there.
Okay. So I'm the production and quality manager.
This is David.
Yes, and I
not
got
Dave.
Not Dave.
Diamond Dave.
I started, you know, when the new facility was still in construction, helped sweep floors and build tables before we could actually brew. Mm-hmm. Did a little end of cleanup blending at the old spot, but I basically run our quality program, which needs to be tip-top shape since we are making so much fresh and sour beer. I also handle a lot of the scheduling in terms of slotting in where we brew, where we package the sour versus fresh beer, and making sure everyone's on top of like their roles in terms of what they're doing. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of monkeys to wrangle, but we've got a good crew of monkeys, so it makes it pretty easy.
David's a monkey conductor, for sure.
Sure they love that, yeah.
Oh, they're stoked.
Enough monkeys brewing, eventually you get good sour beer. Mm-hmm. You know what they say.
True facts.
I've heard that.
So I'm Phil. So my original role was barrel sale manager about 5 years ago with Almanac. I referred to myself as Barrel Monkey because we didn't have ladders.
OSHA has a statute of
OSHA
limitations.
OSHA has honestly. 5 years ago. We have ladders now. Come work at Almanac. We have ladders.
Safety first.
So I'm the head brewer there. I don't like the title brewmaster, but that's what it says on my card. anyway, so between me and David, we basically manage production, you know, write SOPs, make sure everything is organized and, you know, on the train's on schedule. I do most of the blending myself, but it's definitely a team effort. We all taste barrels together and kind of work through it. But kind of good team effort, actually, to be honest.
Good. How many monkeys are there?
There's 11 monkeys, including myself.
Okay.
Yeah. There's 11 colleagues, including myself. I'm going to stop calling them monkeys now.
Okay.
We love you guys if you're listening.
Yeah. Totally love our team. We have a lot of the same people since we've opened the brewery, and that means a lot to me.
You guys are out on Alameda Island now?
Yep, right down the street from Faction, over on the, they call it Spirits Alley. So we got Rockwall and St. George's neighbors.
Yeah. probably for people outside of the area, you know, apologies to everyone else, but St. George is like pretty famous naturally for their spirits, and I think they have pretty just like famous gin. And I mean, if you go there for a tour, they have everything good, but
yeah, they're our homies. We like to collaborate with them, hit them up for spirit barrels, any funky stuff that they have. And it's definitely nice to have a neighbor that makes awesome booze. So
we brought two beers to drink that actually feature their spirits.
Awesome. Nice. So. That's great. And right by Admiral Maltings, too.
Mm-hmm.
Best neighbors to have. Yeah. We use Admiral in basically every beer we brew. We're by far their biggest customer. Maybe it's just proximity. I don't know. We love their malt. It's a great malt. Ron and Curtis are just amazing people. I really can't say enough about what they're doing. I believe
so you
in
don't
it.
Like Dave.
Dave's a sweetheart. Yeah. I just don't see him. He's always on the road, you know? He's always like foreign.
I see him out there.
He's always on the road, but I see those guys out there every day, and they're great folks to commiserate with. You know, they opened the same time we opened, and I don't think we would be doing as well today if we didn't have them as neighbors.
Yeah, it's a great place to visit for sure. I mean, I'm very envious. You know, I think we have a lot of great things going on in Berkeley, but not so close and not so just like, this is what I want to do on a trip. You can get so many different things. It's pretty spectacular.
Just so for those of you that may not be familiar by name with where this is exactly, you might know it from the show Mythbusters, where they did a lot of testing of like cars and explosions and stuff. Didn't they do it right out in that area?
Totally out on that runway. One of those hangars was there. It's the Indiana Jones Temple of Doom movie.
Matrix Reloaded also.
Really?
Oh, my God.
They're actually filming Matrix 4 right now on the island.
Is that right?
Keanu Reeves has been spotted in Alameda.
No way.
100%.
Let's go. Right,
no kidding. So not only is there lore from all these things that we just mentioned, but also, you know, there's like panoramic views of San Francisco, which you see just across the bay, sort of looming over the skyline there, which is, it's an amazing place to spend an afternoon. And the other crazy part is to get there, you sort of drive through zombie apocalypse land, like abandoned factories and stuff. Is that still true?
It's changing, yeah. I mean, so
it's changing crazy.
Base closed 20 years ago, but it's all kind of being redeveloped now. It's kind of cool because it's like the last piece of land in the bay that's not been developed.
Right.
So, you know, the skate park's empty and clean and nice.
your guys' presence and, you know, Faction and Admiral and St. George and et cetera are I mean, helping that change come along quicker.
There's a lot of development happening, like, just a block away from us. They're building a bunch of condos, mixed-use commercial space, parks. Like, the Navy finally sold the land to the city for development. Yep. So within the next couple years, you'll see that entire area completely change. They're building another even ferry terminal a block away from us that's supposed to open up this year. So, you know, Alameda's going to be the new, like, hotspot in the Bay, I think.
I mean, it kind of has been a little bit in the last, you know, 5 years especially. It's gotten quite hot.
I hope it doesn't change. Really, I like it sleepy. It's really nice. Yeah.
That giant's about to wake.
Yeah. It's been a well-kept secret.
And the best tiki bar in the world.
Oh, yeah. If you want a good tiki bar, Forbidden Island.
When did we go there, Jay? We went there after the cruise.
That's right.
Yeah, that was that is a great bar.
That was a great time. Well, now, all right. Well, you guys can be flooded now with Samurai fans.
Yeah.
Swimming to the island.
I heard Keanu's here.
Keanu's here. Where is he?
Yeah. Sour Hour and John Wick fans. Break time?
Yeah, I want to drink some Almanac beer.
Let's do that. Let's go source one of these Almanac beers. We'll be right back after a quick break. This is the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
This is Mike Tonsmeyer, the Mad Fermentationist. You're listening to The Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
All right, we're back. Almanac's on the show. We have Phil and David here in studio. And it's the best time of any day. We've cracked open our first beer.
Yes, we have.
It's not the first beer I've had today. But
oh, I'm hammered.
Yeah.
It's the first Almanac beer.
The shakes just stopped.
Yeah. It's when the day really starts.
I don't know why you guys are laughing.
Good times. It's funny because it's true. So I think I overheard, moving on, I think I overheard that this is, there's gin and bread, and that's all I heard. What beer is this? What's it called? And tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is a gin barrel aged meeting place. So this is a collab we did with Blackberry Farm. Shout out to those guys. Amazing beers. And it's really inspired by the beers that they make. So different from a lot of our beers, it had a primary Belgian fermentation and a fooder. We pulled off maybe about 10% of the volume originally knockout. Fermented that with a single strain of Brett, our favorite Bruxellensis, and then blended all those back together again and bottle conditioned it. This particular version before it got bottle conditioned obviously went to barrel for gin, and it's a St. George gin, their terroir. And we didn't do anything else with it, just kind of a nice restrain acidity. So we didn't introduce bacteria, but we used the fooder that we use mixed culture in normally, kind of on purpose to get a little bit of tartness, but really healthy pitch of Belgian just to let that kind of come through mostly.
You said it's your favorite type of Brux. What is that?
So shout out to Jasper Yeast. It is their Chateau Brux. We've been using that for almost 5 years at Almanac. It's part of our house mix. We do some single fermentation with it from time to time. To me, the note is just very pear and creamy, very nice, rounded, fruity Brett, voracious appetite, just awesome all around yeast.
So voracious appetite, what do you mean by that? Does it mean, like, can it ferment on its own, or does does it go to 0-0? Or
yeah, I mean, most of our beers are, you know, one Plato or lower, so it's just super hungry. Our mixed culture usually ends up around 0. If we do single Brett strains or Brett and sack, we usually end up just around, you know, 0.8 to 1 Plato finishing. So this beer here, I believe, was like a half Plato or something like that. Gotcha. Super dry.
Would you say it's thirsty?
It's thirsty.
Okay. We'll clip that out.
clip it out and we'll use it as a drop.
Yeah, and use it as a drop. So how do you like working with Blackberry Farm? What's their kind of ethos versus the Almanac way of making beer?
It's thirsty. Okay. Awesome. So there's a lot of overlap.
It's the best thing you've done in 3 years.
Three only. Wow, awesome.
So there's a lot of overlap, I think, between Almanac and Blackberry Farm, and that's sort of where a lot of our friendship started. Is, you know, they try to use local ingredients as much as possible. Same for us. Very slow methodology of brewing. Their beers are just beautiful, very Belgian inspired. Although I wouldn't, you know, just lump them in that corner because they make a great pale ale and they make a great Kolsch as well. Really just accomplished brewers in general. But they're sort of farm to barrel. That's copyright, don't use it. But they're sort of farm to barrel as well and how they live. They're on a farm that makes most of what they use. You know, just world-class restaurant. Just amazing. Good folks to know. And then the head brewer, Travis, is just really accomplished brewer. His previous life was a distiller, and I think he approaches brewing from a different lens from most brewers for that perspective. Makes phenomenal beers.
Nice. Yeah, actually, I think we have one of our questions, and thanks to the Milk the Funk forum for coming up big with some questions for us. Sorry, browsing Jeopardy music in the background. Got it. We have Brock New asking, ask about the farm-to-face series. How do they utilize their space and capacity to produce such a crazy range of fruited sours? Part two, what types of ratios are they using for fruiting and time frame space period?
We'll talk about that on the next beer that we try.
Then maybe let's broaden it out a little bit more for this. You know, you talked about farm-to-barrel copyright, and you have farm-to-face.
So farm-to-face is Allagash.
We're farm to barrel.
Maybe they just mean.
But shout out to Allagash. Honestly, love their beers and constant source of inspiration.
Brock New.
Jason just texted me and said to knock it off immediately.
Perkins. Yeah. He listens live to every episode. So, well, then let's talk about. Let's just kind of broaden it out, because I think the general part of the question is, you guys do a lot of fruited beers, and how do you deal with doing so many fruited beers, and what's the connection to working directly with farmers for Almanac?
So we've been working with some of the same farms now for over 6 years. Shout out to Blossom Bluff. We get most of our stone fruit from those guys. We buy imperfect produce from them. It's pretty awesome for both parties. We get fruit that's incredibly ripe, but not, you know, it's got a bruise or something. They'll freeze it in buckets that we use that we don't have waste. There's no bags. They bring the buckets back. We clean them, bring them back. They'll fill up with fruit. And we take over about 30,000 pounds just from that one farm every year.
Wow.
We take in about 60,000 pounds total of whole fresh fruit. And that's not including, you know, any sort of purees or freeze-dried fruit for special projects. So we're definitely, you know, busy with fruit from, like, May to almost you know, end of September.
Yeah, September, October, for sure.
Crazy.
Summer's busy.
Yeah. So when everything's coming in, it's when we're really cranking. We're lucky to have a lot of fooders. So most of the time, they're just fermenting beer. But when the fruit season comes, they end up being double just fruit fermenters.
Gotcha. If I recall, I think I might have seen either on Instagram or something like that, you guys got some fooders with conical bottoms. Am I making that up? Or
yeah,
ooh, totally. Yeah.
And I would imagine those would be great for fruit re-fermentation.
That was the original intention. We haven't actually used them for that yet. We've used them, you know, we dry hopped them a few times. And yeah. I guess we've added a little bit of fruit to them at different purposes. But we've kept one fooder just strictly Saccharomyces and Brettanomyces, and the other one's mixed culture. And we've been using them kind of as primary fermenters, actually, as part of our process. Shout out to Fooder Crafters for making amazing equipment. It's yeah. just been super useful.
It definitely, when you're fruiting at like, you know, 7,000, 8,000 pounds of fruit into a vessel, even if it's wood, it's going to take a while to get all that stuff out. And so we found, especially on our bigger fruiting runs, we'll do that in our stainless steel because you can really apply pressure, you can really apply heat, and you're not going to damage that vessel at all. Whereas like the wood might get hurt and it might not really handle all that. And we need to flip these tanks. Like we got projects going on all the time. So it can't be a five-day process getting fruit out of a fooder. It's got to happen within a couple hours. So the stainless steel vessels, especially on bigger fruiting runs, is where that happens.
Totally. And you touched on the pressure point. And that's something that, you know, every beer we make, fresh or sour, we utilize pressure. We spooned in the process and try to capture as much natural CO2. Since we have a counter-pressure filler, we can bottle condition still, but we can get most of the naturally done in the tank. So that's kind of, I think, for like the fruit, we're trying to retain aroma.
Yeah, it makes sense. And with so many different options that you guys have, and you've got a big, beautiful space. Sound like the president.
it's terrific.
Everyone's saying it's the biggest. It's
the biggest.
It's the best. but you have so much versatility there with, like, all just contrasted with the rare barrel. I mean, we have our tanks when we have oak barrels, and we don't really go with fooders a lot to... And every once in a while, my staff will ask, like, why don't we ever get fooders? And essentially, they're pretty expensive compared to, like, oak barrels. Oak barrels are almost a commodity in California. And what do you view as some of the main benefits and any maybe detractions from people thinking about getting fooders?
Convince Jay to buy a fooder.
So I mean, you know, the
convince
price,
my staff to stop.
The price is absolutely like a hard point, but I think for like you guys especially, like I'm gonna try and sell you on a fooder. For
they're
more fooders,
great.
Yeah, they're awesome. I think you know.
Are you actually trying to sell me a fooder right now?
No.
We're always looking
shout
to buy
fooder crafters. Yeah. You know, it's beneficial in that there's a lot more uniformity. It's a lot more forgiving for auction pickup because it's the volume surface area to volume ratios. You know, it's more risky because if you mess up 30 barrel fooder, that's 30 barrels of beer you got to dump. You know, if one barrel goes bad, that's two barrels of beer, and it sort of concentrates the risk. But I also think, you know, as you learn how to work with the cultures you're working with, you get a lot better at what you do. Just anything in general, you get better the more you practice. So we got to a point that, you know, when I started with Almanac, we had 2,000 barrels of sour beer, 2,000 oak vessels of sour beer. And we're down to about 300 barrels now of oak, single, you know, wine barrels. But we have a lot of fooders, and that's sort of a transition that just kind of knowing what we're trying to make and having a process to it that it's more predictable. I know the outcome. So when we want to do a special project, it's done in wine barrels. When I'm making, let's say, Sunshine and Opportunity, or the base for that, we call it Brett Session, you know, 5% Brett beer. That's really what the fooders are perfect for. Yeah. I want the same result consistently.
Definitely, you know, from a production standpoint, we put out 15,000 barrels of beer last year. 30% of that was sour, and that's, you know, 3,000, 4,000 barrels of sour beer alone. When you're talking about those kind of volumes, it just, you can't house that many wine barrels. Like, you need to consolidate space, especially in the Bay Area where every square foot is so expensive. So for us, working with a 1,000 barrels of fooder capacity, that's only 17 fooders, and it allows us to make blends, big blends, especially when we're talking about 100 barrel, 200 barrel blends, and we don't have to put in that much labor to get that volume. So for our size, it's the easiest thing to work with.
I mean, that's got to put you in the top 10 of American like mixed
top
fermentation.
Five.
Oh, top five. Yeah,
I,
wow.
I don't know.
Really? I would believe it. I mean, several thousand barrels.
I don't know.
Honestly, it's so like, I think I kind of remember on one of the episodes seeing something similar about that, about the Rare Barrel, when we were starting, like maybe in the first year of this podcast. And I think at this moment, based on that volume, we're probably around a quarter to a third of your guys' volume. So that's just in our backyard. And you, the way sour beer has exploded, mostly, you know, due to this podcast. But
it's all about...
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
But there's like breweries out there making so much sour beer.
Yeah, that the market could support that.
That, and we don't know, actually. Like, I'll just give one example. When I went to visit Trillium, Humblebrag, I saw their sour beer program, and I was like, what? This is one of the biggest sour beer programs in the United States. And, you know, I knew, of course, about Trillium's hoppy canned beers, and they were well-known for that. I knew they were growing a lot, but I had no idea they had this, like, 2 or 3,000 BBL, you know, sour beer program going, and I'm sure it's only gotten bigger since then, so it's kind of hard to track.
I'm guessing your number one market for bottle sales is California, right? Is it not
we
close?
We sell about 70 to 80% of all the beer we make in
all
California.
Of it. Okay, and how far out does the footprint go?
So, you know, we're worldwide in the sense that we might send three barrels to Berlin at some point this year.
Okay.
But no, watch out, Berlin.
Again, like 80% of the beer we're making gets sold in California, and then the rest of it's split between about 22 states, specifically markets that we think really appreciate the beers that we're making, and then ideally trying to target accounts that we personally like to drink at.
Sure.
So it's kind of awesome to go to Philly and drink at a bar that you love, and... Hey, that's got my steaks. Beer. Yeah. I won't have it, but I'm not have. Yeah, exactly.
I won't have it.
Totally. Cheesesteak and somebody's local beer. But.
Can I get, so Gino's for some almanac and a cheesesteak?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a fair
yeah.
trade.
I want to ask quickly about the, because we still have the last of this gin barrel aged beer in our glasses.
It's very good,
it is, was it St. George spirit barrels? Yeah. So what are you doing to, because this is, it doesn't have, like, gin I always think of as overwhelming, but this is pretty subtle. What's the barrel treatment look like?
In particular, we didn't really want to overdo it with the gin notes. We wanted it to be kind of floral and just kind of like an extra thing on there. But so this beer is blended almost one-to-one with the un-gin version to really kind of accentuate the beer as itself. The barrel of strength, it actually added like a 1.5%, 2% alcohol. It was kind of
single
barrel.
Yeah.
We had to blend it down just to make it very like palatable and drinkable.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't...
This one's like 7%, I think.
Very
7%.
Easy going.
Yeah. No, it definitely has a lot of the characteristics of the un-ginned version, but I think the gin barrel added a little bit of more botanical, maybe a little herbaceous note to it that if you did a side-by-side, they would definitely be different beers. But it was just cool to have a little variation to something, and again, to work with St. George, who are our homies. We just went down there. We were picking up some bourbon barrels, and they also had a gin barrel available, and we're like, can we have that too?
You guys are so lucky.
And they were like, yeah, here you go. So... Yeah, definitely.
Actually, you guys got a gin barrel from them too, right?
We did, but now we're going to have to bleep out just the name of St. George so that we can keep all of them for ourselves. Because gin barrels are just like, they're like beyond gold when it comes to sour beer making, I think. If you can get one freshly emptied, you're just, that beer's going to be really fucking good.
I think of Commons, they had this like gin barrel peach beer that was just beyond belief. R.I.P. Commons, but just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Just worked.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to this next beer, and we had that tease question that pertained to this guy as well.
Yes.
This one is a oak barrel age. It's got strawberries, raspberries, cherries, nectarines, and pear. Whoa, a lot of fruit.
All the things.
How are we on time for this segment? Because we could tease this all out.
Yeah. That's true. We can. Yeah, we can. We could take a break.
Cause I actually have, because then I have some other questions that also go with this beer.
That's we can take a break. I do want to point out that both Jay and I wheeled around to look at the clock on the wall when we were like, how are we doing on time? We wheeled around to look at this Gordon Biersch clock that's been on the wall. But have you noticed, like the top of the show, it isn't working. Doesn't work.
It's a little behind.
Oh, you're right. Well, I haven't been looking at my phone, too.
All right. I need to take that thing off the wall and recurate in here. But it's just along the theme of the, you know, it's a new year, same BN.
Yeah. That's funny.
Does it work?
All right. Let's regroup.
Okay.
Let's take a break.
Where are we? What are we doing?
That's a great question. That'll be my first one coming back on the next segment of the Sour Hour.
Thank you. Hey, this is Andrew from Modern Times. And let me start over. Should I say 1, 2, 3? Hi, this is Andrew from Modern Times Beer. I'm on the Sour Hour. Please. Hey, this is Andrew from Modern Times Beer. You're listening to the Sour Hour, where skin contact isn't just a frame of mind. On the okay, one more time. Hey, this is Andrew from Modern Times Beer. You're listening to the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network, and we care about hops too. How long does it take you guys to edit this shit?
It's the best.
It's the best.
It's the best.
Thanks, Andrew. I play it on every show, but I don't even care.
Reminder, we got to get liners today.
You got it.
And a picture.
And a picture.
Scott, someone's a professional here.
Yeah, and Bee
just
will,
left.
Bee will be like annoyed that she has to take a picture. It's a whole routine.
Yeah. Well, she's also disgusted because she's eating while Andrew's saying where skin contact is not just a frame of mind. And she's like, blah, blah.
Sorry, I didn't want to chew on.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Don't want to do that.
I don't know what I was going to say to that.
Cool.
Yeah, perfect. Sorry. It's gone. Bye. Along.
And we're back.
Glad you're here today.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, she's leaving in a minute.
Good. Oh, who's going to take the picture, though?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, who's going to take your picture? I'm not going to be here.
Good question.
Nailed it.
We'll find it. We'll stop a stranger on the street.
All right. So we have another beer open here with Almanac.
Can I just say something really quickly about having people take it? Why does it get screwed up so often when, like, you know, you want to post with the family and you stop a stranger, hey, can you take a picture of us? And, you know, sometimes it turns out, but then other times they've walked away. You look at your phone to see what they've taken and it's like, what were you doing? It's like blurry. It's screwed up. That happens all the time to me. Does it happen to you guys?
Totally. When people want to take selfies with me, when I'm just walking down.
You got to stop asking like the 60-year-old grandpa. Ask like the 21-year-old millennial who's taking selfies every day. Like, she'll get the angles. Oh, she'll get, like, you know.
She'll throw on a filter.
That's like, ageist.
I'm just saying, millennials know how to take photos.
Portrait mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're so right. I'm asking boomers. That's the problem.
You should stop asking people to take your pictures. It's hell of annoying.
Oh, come on, man. Jeez.
What if I want my shoes in the photo? That's, someone's got to take them.
Exactly. Okay. Sorry. We're here with Almanac. And what are you saying?
3, 2.
Yeah.
And we're back. We're here with Almanac, and we've got their Farmer's Reserve number 5 open. This is a sour beer with many fruits, and tell us about this.
So it's a fruit salad, for sure. So Farmer's Reserve 5 is like a nod to the first 4 beers we ever put out as a sour brewery, 1 through 4. It kind of plays a lot off of some of the themes. In particular, it leans heavy on like Farmer's Reserve number 3, which is strawberries and nectarines. This incorporates a few of our other favorite fruits, and it's the first year-age sour out of our new facility. So it was a beer that we were really proud of, just something that we put out after a year. And it got a medal at GABF this year. We got a silver for it. It's pretty stoked.
Congratulations.
In what care? In what category?
Mixed culture.
Okay beer.
No, okay beer, yeah.
Silver and okay. You are the most okay beer in the okay category.
Sorry, you said oak aged.
Oh.
Qualifier.
No, it's fantastic. And I definitely get, I can't remember all the numbers, but like I remember the strawberry nectarine beer for sure, because that was a fantastic beer. And that does come out pretty strongly in this. But we actually have, speaking of strawberries, a question from Milk the Funk, Sean McVay, not the Rams head coach, but what are they doing with strawberries that is different from other breweries? Theirs is among the only non-plasticky strawberry sour that I've had before, except for the rare barrel. I added that last part.
Fields Forever is really good. And we have talked about that. That is a good point. Did you guys have that experience, like, where did you struggle with strawberries for a while?
And this beer does not
have
that.
Yeah,
totally. So we originally used to source all of our strawberries from California for the first few years, and we've made some good beers with those strawberries. Shout out to Dirty Girl for Dirty Girl Farms. Let me clarify that one. For the strawberries. And but this beer uses...
I got a reaction from Bevo. Yeah. Wow.
Leave your girlfriend out of this.
Shout out, Dirty Girl. This uses freeze-dried strawberries. So that's just something we've learned over the years, that certain ways of fruit work better for beers. And, you know, anecdotally, people talk about the tops of strawberries being a problem, talk about the seeds being problems. We can say from experience that we've included those and excluded those, and we've had phenolically and non-phenolic barrels. We used to only fruit in barrels, so it was kind of cool to see the differences, you know, went along. But when we switched to freeze-dried, just specifically for strawberries, the character always came out clean, always came out true to strawberry notes. none of the phenolic character. Mm-hmm. I can say anecdotally, my experience in the past was the more white flesh on a strawberry seemed to correlate to more phenolics. But
interesting.
So specifically using varieties that aren't so like grown for the supermarket, but grown for actual flavor.
So the riper, the better?
So when you cut up a strawberry, a lot of times it's just white through all the way through. That's like a supermarket strawberry. But there's varieties that you'll cut open that are more for like jams and jellies that will be like red all the way through.
So it's not a ripeness thing necessarily. It's the color.
So literally a varietal thing. So we've had a good, for Bay Area folks, we've had good success with Seascapes. But I think Chantel or Chanterelle or whatever is another variety that's big out here. Those are those were definitely something we wouldn't buy again. Yeah. Hmm. Chandler, that's the name of the variety, Chandler.
We also do a lot of like crazy techniques at Almanac that probably you wouldn't have thought to have done, but we tried them and it worked. We've incorporated a lot of like pump overs and punch downs from the wine industry, especially on our bigger blends. We really want all that fruit flavor to get incorporated into beer. And, you know, when Phil first told me that we were going to be doing this, I was like, no, oxidation. No, everything's going to be just garbage. And then, we tested it after doing a punch down or a pump over on our beers. And, there was very little oxygen pickup. And we were able to get more contact with the fruit, extract more color, extract more flavor, exactly how winemakers do it. And there was no detriment to the beer. So maybe that's something that we're doing that other people might not be.
So explain that process a little bit. What, for someone who doesn't know what a pump over is, not me, obviously.
Well, Jay, when a pump and an over get together and they fall in love. Some of my background, I made wine for a year.
Humble brag.
Trillium.
At Trillium. I made wine up in Sonoma, and then I did a harvest in Australia. And basically, when you're fermenting your wine, you have the juice in contact with the grape skins, and all the grape skins float to the top because of CO2. And so you want to make sure that all the flavor that's in those grape skins gets in contact with the juice and gets extracted. So in order to do that, you pump over the juice on top of the grape skins to wet them and extract more flavor out of them. And then a punch down is basically you're punching that cap of grape skins back into the juice in order to put more contact with the skins and the juice to keep extracting flavor. So we do that with our fruits. Say we're doing strawberries or raspberries or what peaches. And so we're going to pump that beer over on top of the cap that's formed on top. And that helps extract even more flavor instead of just having that top layer exposed and not really doing anything.
Sure. Would you describe like kind of a similar part of the brewing process is like Vorloff almost, like, is that
totally
a similar kind of thought process?
Yeah.
And how do you a concern of yours, David, early on was the oxygen exposure. Are there ways to mitigate it, or is it actually like Vorloff and a lot of mash tuns where it's splashing against the wall and kind of coming down, or what's the process there?
I mean, we have Anton Parr C-Box, humble brag.
That is a not so humble brag, yeah.
And so we're able to measure these things analytically and really get down to the ppb, ppbm level in terms of where our oxygen is, where our CO2 is. And so literally we do these pump overs and punch downs, and I'll be measuring off the tank as we're doing it, and there's no pickup. I think a lot of the CO2.
Like 50 parts.
Yeah, there is a little bit of pickup, sure, but, Brett loves a little bit of oxygen. That's why we keep it in barrels. And so I think a little bit of that oxygen is also helping that beer develop and introducing a little bit more, especially when we're fruiting in stainless steel vessels. That oxygen is beneficial almost instead of detrimental. So, in terms of our production, we do a couple punch downs or pump overs on our beers in order to extract as much flavor from that fruit as possible. And there's no detriment to the beer.
Awesome. Scott, I think I have a show question for you. Mm-hmm. So I think we're outpacing our show time with the beers we're opening right now.
Really? Because there's a bunch more beers back there.
Are there a bunch more beers back there?
These are the last two. We have some, palate cleansers.
So there's some. The rest of it is clean beer?
There's a couple sours in there, too.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so we could open those. There's also one in the Brewing Network staff kegerator.
The green room fridge.
That just got tapped, I saw.
On tap, yep.
That we could open.
Perfect.
Okay, then we're okay.
Cool. And well, I want to
just
make sure
for the, just, you know, I'm running this show right
yes,
now.
Yes, the professional in the room.
I don't know what you're doing, sure really, but, on pace. You know, yeah.
Well, I'm making sure that we get to the question that we teased. Did we?
Oh, yeah.
Did we get to that?
Yeah. What's our
the
fruit,
one that was really stuff? About Allagash?
Yeah. Oh, it was that one? So oh, okay.
I essentially reworded it, and I think we paid it off.
Okay, good.
We used a lot of fruit.
Then we did the... again, thanks for Tim's brother's question, the strawberry question. And I have a lot more questions. I think maybe towards the end we can do even like a lightning round of a lot of these things. But
okay, cool.
So we have more beers to go. Then I will start this next beer because it's a beer in a can, which, you know, I'd say more often than not, the beers we're opening on the show, we don't talk about packaging format that often, maybe a design a little bit. But this is a sour beer in a can called Hypernova 2.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about this beer, and then let's talk a little bit about canned sours.
I want to point out, too, that it does say on the side of the can, the first thing in all capitals, this is not a kettle sour.
Yeah. Damn straight.
We don't make kettle sours. Nothing against them. People make some fabulous ones out there. But we just use bacteria. Let it do its thing. Nothing is kettle soured. And I think that's kind of a cool distinction about cans, and it's kind of trying to change that conversation because, like Jay said, historically this style is only ever packaged in bottles. So this beer, Hypernova, is really just focusing on plums. It's got a lot of other fruits in there, but it's really all about the plums. And these are plums from Blossom Bluff. These are fruit that we got back in July or August of last year. Just a heavily fruited, mixed fermentation Brett beer. Not too funky, not too sour. Something kind of unique about this is it has lactose in it. In the mixed culture, which we were kind of scared to do at first. This is our second sour with lactose, and it's very light, but we were just kind of concerned about re-fermentation, not ever using milk sugar in sours. So it took a while to be convinced that things were stable, but things are stable. So
there's also a preview of our Beer Week release. I don't know when this is getting released podcast-wise, but this beer is not yet out. It's coming out for Beer Week. So you guys are exclusive.
For sale on the 7th.
Nice. Exclusive. Pew, pew.
Right on.
This could drop before Beer Week, perhaps.
It will. Yes, it will.
Yeah. Well, so walk us through the lactose addition, more in the, like, how much was it? And then what was your process for evaluating its stability and then kind of now confirming that it is stable?
So, I mean, another you know, kind of wrinkle to this is this beer finishes higher than most of our other beers just because of the amount of fruit that we use and really waited for that to be finished and fermented. And prior experience, just based on the fruits that we're using, where it would end up. And then we dosed in about a half pound per barrel of lactose, blended that back up, let it condition in the tank, and just ensured that it was stable in the tank, knowing what we would add, making sure there was no further fermentation.
How long was that stabilizing?
So just
period?
To guarantee, or for my own, like, you know, feeling good, was about 2 weeks in the tank.
Okay.
Just at that point, knowing that this is the second batch we've done, so I kind of had a good feeling based on everything being the same. But this is almost a month now in the can, just monitoring it, make sure everything's stable. We anticipate a small amount of re-fermentation in all of our cans. We're anticipating 0.1 to 0.2 Play-Doh drop. Mm-hmm. That's by design, cleanup. Some cans we have done can conditioning from the start. This beer is not. This is tank conditioned. So I mentioned that kind of earlier, that something we do for all of our beers is we spooned them. All our brights are rated for 30 PSI. So a beer that's, you know, conditioning it, heavy head pressure and re-fermenting in the tank, we capture all that carbonation and it works really well.
Nice.
Yeah, also after we package something, especially that has this much sugar, I'll put a couple cans or bottles into an incubator that we have in the lab. So to just speed up the process, it's definitely going to be a lot higher than just room temp. So check those after a couple weeks and see if anything's happened. And that's kind of like also a QC check that we'll do.
So why do you think that you don't have problems with this? Because, you know, you are... This isn't how you would set up for like the most stable canned beer, right? There are risks of a little higher finishing plus the milk sugar. What do you attribute the stability of that to?
Probably our house culture, yeah.
Our house culture, you know, beer is fairly stable. We know our recipes one, so we know what we're starting with. This beer is based on it's kind of the same recipe as Brett Session. We know where the terminal is. We can add fruit to that. We know where terminal is. We'll hold it. These beers in particular, again, I just want to stress that we take a lot of caution to make sure it is stable. It was a lot of like stressful nights and sleepless nights the first time we started doing this.
For sure.
This is 2 years in now, and we have a very strong feeling. Part of like what David said is the incubation, so we validate before we ever let anything go to the market. And the other part is that we keep a library going, and we monitor that monthly to see how the library is changing. We warm store it. We really want it. We treat the beer like garbage in our library.
Worst case scenario.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sort of like if someone left this in their trunk for 8 months, what's going to happen?
Scott scenario. No, I'm just joking. Yeah.
Either Scott or Scottsdale.
I mean, it's not really in an SUV. It's not really a trunk, Jay. It's kind of open to the rest of the car.
Yeah,
it's not
the
that
AC's
bad.
The AC's running
direct
sometimes.
Sunlight.
Yeah. Green bottles. You know, they're supposed to have direct
they get
sunlight.
Better. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, that's what we're doing at the Rare Barrel, too. So it's good to, you know, not only hear you guys are doing that, but also, you know, say it for the podcast, because people should take this really seriously. There's because things can go wrong.
There's some folks that are packaging unfermented fruit in that's going to ferment, and that's not cool whatsoever. We're not packaging unfermented fruit. You know?
Yeah.
We want customers to come back, not beers to come back.
We also don't want like an instruction list of how to treat the beer. Like, we absolutely want our beer respected, mm-hmm. but we just know that someone's going to forget about something somewhere.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
You know, not acceptable for it to explode ever.
Definitely. Yeah, especially if your beer is going to, you know, 10, 20 states. And, you know, I think, you know, these unfermented beers we're talking about, a lot of that is, hopefully it stays local. Hopefully there is an instruction packet for that. You know, keep cool, drink fresh. And it's kind of like you think of it as a crowler or a growler fill. But, you know, if one brewery doesn't get that memo, then they're sending out, you know, bombs, essentially.
We insist upon cold chain supply as well. So everyone that picks up our beer has to pick it up in a refrigerated truck, even our bottle conditioned beer. It's just sort of the rules that if you're picking up anything from Almanac, it's got to be refrigerated. All of our distributors have that rule as well. The only risk is when it goes out to the market, so that we feel super confident that things are stable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the right way to go. But, you know, some things can go wrong with cans, and that's something that we as sour beer brewers, I include myself in this, who put beer in cans, have talked about kind of offline for a while. You guys have experience with this and looked into it quite a bit. Can you share some facts and tips on putting a sour beer into a can with the listeners? And I'll give just a quick shout out. I paraphrased a question from... Shane Bird from the Milk the Funk Forum. He's also asking about, you know, like FDA approved BPA and cans and lids and low pH and unwanted chemicals. What have you guys found in, you know, this process of putting sour beer in cans?
Sure. You know, I'll kind of back it up a little bit for folks that don't know necessarily that cans were epoxy liner. What's not doesn't really have to explain what epoxy liner is, but all cans previously were epoxy liner. Epoxy includes BPA, which the state of California has found causes cancer, birth defects, a lot of other issues. So the rules are now that every can must be BPA-NI, non-intentional, BPA non-intentional cans. That rule started right when we started packaging sour cans. We did a lot of tests ourselves. We found that when the liners were switched, there was a brand of cans that was not compatible, and we found that there was a brand of cans that is compatible. So shout out to Ball. Ball cans seem to work really well. We've been aging beer now for 2 years in cans in our library to see. Every package of Ball BPA and I cans has been fantastic, has worked really well. So I think that's something that, you know, when we approached both manufacturers, both manufacturers told us we'd be okay. And I think this kind of falls back to the diligence that brewers need to do, which is just to make sure, do some tests before you put something on the market. Is it going to be okay? Especially when it's something new, like cans and sour beer. Anecdotally, it doesn't seem to be related to any specific, you know, beer. It's any sour beer will destroy it. We know that the, you know, cans that they use for, you know, for Coca-Cola are much lower pH. So it seems to be like a specific acid. My own guess is it's lactic. That's the unifying thing. Some beers have fruit. Some beers don't have fruit. It didn't make a difference. That's kind of our experience has been, you know, beers are very stable, packaged in there. And then, the other thing I would say is that temperature accelerates the deterioration of these liners if you have a problem. But even cold temperature, it's going to dissolve. You're going to have an issue. So things that we stored in the epoxy can or the BPA-NI from a one brand didn't work. All BPA-NI cans from Ball work, though. So anyone looking to package sour beer should start there.
the segment sponsored by Ball.
is it the same company that does the mason jars?
It's the same.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're good at canning.
Cool. Yeah, no kidding. Can I ask, I mean, it's probably a foolish rookie question, so forgive me in
advance.
Phil
unreasonably liked that joke.
I'm a dog dad.
The lactose. I mean, you know, you think about milk in a, you know, over an extended period of time, it obviously can, like, you know, sour and get really bad. And does anything similar happen with lactose?
No. So lactose is just simply a milk sugar. So it's like another sugar. But what's different about it is it's not fermentable. It's selectively fermentable by certain yeast and bacteria. Lactobacillus happens to love it. Most Saccharomyces will not touch it. Some Brett will touch it. But there's no rancidity issues whatsoever. It's just sort of a, it leaves a false sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's kind of a nice, you know, softener. Mm-hmm. I really like it as a softener. It kind of rounds out a mouthfeel.
Sure. And the vanilla beans kind of work in that same vein.
Totally. We use a lot of vanilla for certain projects, and we really like it. So, for instance, the next beer coming up, Bourbon Barrel Patch.
I'm popping it right now.
It also, uses, Beer Week exclusive.
Pew, pew, pew. Yeah, nice. It uses what?
So it's a St. George Bourbon Barrel, and I think there's a couple of rye barrels in there, too. But St. George Bourbon Barrels, and it uses, there's a pound of vanilla beans in about 20-barrel batch. So it's not over the top, but the difference being, if you're used to making stouts, is that, you know, sour is a very thin body beer, so kind of a lot goes a long way in a good way. We liked it because it kind of rounds the edges of the bourbon. So for a beer that's almost 8%, it does not drink like it.
No kidding. No,
definitely not.
This is more St. George spirit barrels. Like Phil said, bourbon barrels, peaches, nectarines, apricots, and vanilla beans.
Again, we'll be bleeping out St. George in post.
Yeah.
So totally. That we get all of the barrels here locally.
We're keeping Alameda and St. George to ourselves.
Definitely. Cool. Let's see. Where are we at? All right. I keep still looking at that fucking clock. Don't laugh, Evo.
It's still 12:46 or whatever.
Yeah.
It's doing that thing, too, where the second hand is, like, sort of ticking back and forth. You know, it's trying to move forward, much like the BN, but it's sort of stuck.
we're coming up on show break. Do we
it's
wanna
so on the nose, isn't it, Beav?
Tease
it's so good.
Do you want to tease this beer or get to it in this show? And then
let's do this one, and then we'll do the.
Can do this one pretty quick.
Yeah, okay. And we can get to some clean beers in the next show, which should be fun. A little palate cleanser, and
it's the sour hour.
Oh yeah, crap.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about
sour
this beer. What's this one called again?
This is Bourbon Barrel Patch. So this is the second time we made this beer, but this time it was all St. George for. Bleep out that.
Yeah.
This time it was all a anonymous distillery. So about 30% of this is 2-year-old beer aged in wine barrels. Just fun old, you know, heavy on the aldehydes, a lot of almond notes coming through. Mm-hmm. And then the remaining 70% was Blossom Bluff peaches and nectarines. Shout out to Blossom Bluff again. And then aged for about 6 months. So about 6 months Brett beer blended with about 30% 2-year-old wine barrel aged beer. Really proud of it. We like it a lot. We think it's one of the better beers we've made in our existence, and just kind of different for our beers as well. We don't typically use a lot of spirit barrels for sour. We like how it integrated really well.
It's very, very good. What do you think about this one, Scott?
I have yet to sip it. I'm sniffing it.
Gross. Gross that you said sniffing.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay, well, first impression, the vanilla bean is much more pronounced in this beer than it was in the Supernova that we just had.
Totally.
Which is, you know, it's kind of acting not just to soften it, it still does, but now it's like a flavor.
It's a big mouthfeel. Big flavor.
Mm-hmm, which I really like. I mean, I love vanilla. I don't know, where's you guys' head on vanilla?
Love it. I hate the cost.
Yeah.
Oh, they're expensive. Yeah.
Crazy expensive. Actually, you guys make phenomenal beer that I've always been inspired by, which is the Home Sour Home. And this last year, you guys did the rye version, which I really, really like.
Yeah, that was one of my faves.
Thanks. That was one of our most popular beers of last year, for sure.
And does, I forget if Home Sour Home, does it have peaches and nectarines?
Peach, vanilla, cinnamon, okay. And then we aged it in rye whiskey barrels.
I don't think I got a chance to try the rye one yet.
It's only for special people.
Well, that explains it.
I feel special.
But yeah, I think you guys are doing a great job with these spirit barrels, especially, you know, with the bumps in ABV. None of them have even approached hot. To start, I mean, that's kind of the first thing I look for. And to explain, hot is just like, you know, just too boozy kind of thing for listeners who don't know. But then it's just so well integrated where it's never really like the first flavor I get, but it's always the second one, if that makes sense. It's not like I don't have to
complimentary for sure.
Yeah, I don't have to go searching for it. It's not a nuance. It's really that. It's like there's a flavor, and then it's the barrel character, which I think is kind of ideal in my mind.
Yeah, you don't want it to overpower, or you don't want it to just be one-noted. Definitely making a beer in a boozy barrel, you have to think about the barrel and what it's going to add and make sure that it's not going to overpower anything you put in there.
We're definitely striving for balance, like in everything we make, whether it's sour or fresh, just be round and balanced and drinkable. Drinkable, I think, is kind of the key. Is it something, you know, you struggle to finish, or do you really like, you know, mm-hmm. is it an easy glass? Sour beer can be a hard amount of beer to drink a lot of. I personally don't guzzle pints of sour beer. It's a sipper, but, you know, it's if it's something that the next sip you're like, okay, cool, I like what I'm going with this. It's not a, you don't need a Pilsner in between, but it's nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that really struck me about just going back to the first beer we had, the gin barrel aged beer, the balance part. And I mentioned it that the gin part wasn't overwhelming or far from it. But also, you know, it was really nice. Like, you know, when it first sort of hits your palate, it's like, oh, a Belgian blonde. And then it immediately becomes clear, oh, no, it's not this is a mixed fermentation beer. But like none of the other parts of it, the acidity or the gin or anything, you couldn't pick out any individual thing. It was just like a nice blend of other acidic nuance to this like Belgian blonde. You know, I liked that a lot, that it was just super balanced and super drinkable. Yeah.
We've been working on it for sure. You know, we used to be very sour. We have learned the hard way that IBUs matter.
And sounds familiar.
We've been adding more and more IBUs as we go, and our lactobacillus is very aggressive. So if anyone wants to harvest barrel dregs, I'd say start about 20 IBUs. Bottle dregs for sure, you know, 20 IBUs.
And Almanac beers are harvestable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we package all our beer with yeast inside mixed culture. If you were to get one of our farm-to-barrel beers, you would basically have our house culture, which is about 160 generations now, David? 150 generations?
Ooh, yeah. Nice. This thing has lasted the age of time. Like, I've lost count. It's moved facilities. It's moved fooders. It's a own living, breathing thing. It's our house cat.
So we call it the house cat. Yeah, totally. It's our house culture. It's literally an amalgamation of a lot of different breads, a couple of different saison strains, and a lacto strain in there. There's a few other like novel yeasts, like Cluveromyces, that have made their way in there. Sourdough yeast starter made its way in there.
Got
early
some
on.
Berkeley Brewing Science yeast probably in
Got
there
some
now.
Berkeley Brewing Science. Shout out to those boys. Pekia. Things have come and gone. We don't plate it. We don't bother trying to control it either. We like it. We augment it from time to time, but it's the same culture that ferments every sour beer we put out.
Awesome. I think there are some questions on the house culture, but maybe we'll save it for the end of the next show.
That
I think that'll be
me.
Like a good lightning round. I think
lightning round
for sure.
And Scott says we're wrapping up this one by playing the music already. Before
it
I give
time.
Them the rodeo,
it is time.
Thanks to you guys. Almanac, great beer.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, totally.
We'll hold them hostage for another show. Thanks to all the listeners. Thanks to everyone from Milk the Funk for submitting questions. Thanks to the sponsors. Thanks to Bevo. Thanks to Scott. Until next time.
Thank you, Ball.
Stay sour.
Thanks, Mom. We've got a good crew of monkeys.